Welcome to the Kids with Big Emotions podcast. I'm your host, Andy Clark, and I have Jen with us today. And Jen I wrote down a couple of points and stuff that I'm like, ooh, I want to dive into this. So I'm super excited. I don't know where we're going to end up in this episode because I love to go through this organically. So Jen, thank you so much for being here today with us. And I would love if you could just start off by letting everybody know a little bit about yourself.
Well, Andy, first of all, thank you for having me here. Like, I think the work that you do and the messages that you share are absolutely critical. So I'm honored to be a part of this conversation with you. So my name is Jen Abasiello. I'm a former dominant, and I say recovering perfectionist and high achiever. And I really struggled in my parenting. Before parenting, I was checking all the boxes on what society deemed successful between, you know, the high grades, the promotion after promotion. And I thought I was successful, right? Society validated that I was successful with all these external accolades. And then I became a parent later in life, and it brought me to my knees. And it was through my own struggles and learning to overcome that led me to a career pivot where I now support high achieving professional parents to break generational parenting patterns, to find more calm, peace, and connection within their home. Because I believe parenting can be instinctual, but a lot of us need to learn to parent in a way that feels good. And I'm there to support parents to find that inner knowing and find more joy in parenting.
The word joy, that's one I hear often. I don't have joy. I don't know what brings me joy anymore. Or I can't feel joy, even things that used to bring me joy.
Yeah. And a lot of that for me was being so disconnected from myself from also a very young age. Like, I have very few conscious memories of my childhood. So when, you know, someone used to ask me, what did you love to do? I was like, what the heck did I do? I loved when I was a child and what was play like. And so for me, some of the things that I did that were quote unquote joyful before kids were hard to access when I had young kids. Like, I used to be a runner and a long distance runner, and I used to spend a lot of time in the gym and doing weights and yoga. And we have no extended family for support. So when I became a mother, getting that time to myself to do those activities that really were my well-being was inaccessible. So I found it really hard to find that joy, because when you're in the deep end parenting and then going to work, you have no time for yourself. And it's really hard in those early years to find that joy if you feel like you're just trying to survive.
Yeah. And I recall a friend saying to me at one point that when you have a child, you have to mourn your old life. And I thought at the start, I was like, that's an interesting thing to say, because I thought like mourning was a negative, like, and the thing though is that we have so many different seasons in life and they keep changing as our kids' ages adapt. Like, so when we are single versus when we're in a relationship and everything keeps changing and adapting. The thing is that change and adaptation from not having a child to having a child is so large that it's very noticeable that, like you're saying, you can't get out and run and be at the gym, and just the travel time to and from the gym is almost more than you can even spare, let alone being at the gym. And if you're running too, if you are trying to run and you've got a running stroller and a kid throwing stuff out that's hungry or throwing stuff out of the stroller as you're running, like, it's not the same run anymore either. That even if you are trying to do the same things, they're still done in a different way, that we need that time to mourn our old life. And it's okay to grieve it. It's okay to be sad and have those moments and then search for how can I find that joy in this stage of life.
You're bang on. I remember having this guilt of missing my former life. Like, I shouldn't miss that, because in my mind, that meant that I didn't love my kids. But in reality, two things can be true, right? You can miss parts of that former life, and you can love your child or your children deeply. You don't need to invalidate one for the other to be true. And really coming to that realization and that acceptance was a big part of going through that grief process. Because when we try and suppress the grief that's there, it builds inside of us. And for me, that suppression, because I was struggling and I missed my former life and not being able to give that voice because I felt shame and feeling that way, it actually turned to rage. And I saw a side of myself that I didn't know what was there, because before children, I was even called stoic. And in my mind, I wore that as a badge of honor, even though the person that said that to me, a former boyfriend, did not mean it positively. He said I was like emotionless, I was stoic. And I took that with pride, because I was always working in male-dominated industries and emotions were not something you show in the workplace. And so being stoic, I thought, was a good quality until motherhood.
Right. And this is the thing, is we often, I think we've been brought up to believe that it's one or the other. It's this or that, instead of living in the and. And when we start going, well, it can be both. I can love my children and I can miss my former life. I can love my kids and I can be frustrated as heck with stuff that's going on. I can love being a parent sometimes, and I can not like some of the parenting moments. It's okay to live in that and honor both without shame or guilt. I have friends that, like, so I homeschool my kids. I love being at home with them. It brings me joy. It brings me calm. It brings me connectiveness. I have friends that it does not, that they do need more time and more space away from their kids. They need to be in an office. They love that career, like being out, like I work in the office and I built everything around my kids, and other people haven't. And both are okay.
Yeah.
You should not feel guilt, because like there are times I do sometimes feel guilt that I didn't go into a 9-to-5 corporate job. That, I mean, I love entrepreneurship and I love what I do, but I did have to even bring it down to part-time once I decided to homeschool my kids. And there's times I do feel guilt, or when someone's asking me what I do, I don't ever tell them that I do it part-time, because there's a bit of a shame there in saying that. Meanwhile, I've done that so that I could do what lights me up, by having that time with my child and the child that needs, he cannot be in the school system, just the way the system is run doesn't work for him. And it's hard.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing you say, that's definitely been a part of my journey, is oftentimes we spend so much of our life looking outward at what other people expect of us, what society expects of us. And what I'm hearing you say, and it's so true, is that tuning into what feels good for me, what am I needing, and trusting that. And it's going to look different for you, for me, for your friend. And that's okay. Right. Again, back to the acceptance of we are different. What lights us up, what brings us energy, our situations, all of that is different. And what we have to learn to do is really notice when we're looking outward for answers and really trust our inner knowing. And it's reconnecting to that, because like I said before, most of us have been disconnected from it a lot of times based on how we were raised in our own childhood, where we didn't learn to trust what our body was signaling to us.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is there has been this whole shift, I believe. I remember speaking with, it was when I was painting the front of our house couple summers ago, and my neighbor, who is a therapist as well herself and works with kids, and she said, we are the generation that is breaking generational traumas, generational expectations, societal expectations. And we're starting to just, things just were done the way they were done. So for our parents, parenting was done that way. Like, you were yelled at, you listened to being yelled at, you changed the behavior. You did not question it. And if you question,
you do what I say because I said so, was kind of the parenting philosophy.
Yeah, exactly. And we're starting to change it. Although going through this self-discovery of changing it, there's also all these questions of like, okay, but how do we do this in a way as well that is still going to benefit our kids and not be too lenient? So I think the pendulum has kind of gone where it was too harsh.
Yeah.
And then we've gone to too lenient, that now we're kind of figuring this middle ground where we're learning more about connected parenting.
And I always remind parents, there's actually, in my mind, based on research from the 1960s that I think still holds true, there's four parenting styles. And really, those are still true when you look at all the different nomenclature that gets overlaid. That's, in my mind, as a marketer, and I feel I have right to say this, it's a lot of it's marketing, right? This whole gentle parenting, peaceful parenting, but it leads to confusion.
Yes. Right?
It leads to confusion because, like you just said, we end up swinging the pendulum the other way where we think, oh, we're just supposed to validate feelings and there's no boundaries and there's no consequences. And that's not true. And this is the work that I do with a lot of parents who then feel like, well, like, I know I'm not supposed to punish. I'm like, well, the definition in my mind of consequences versus punishment is like, what are you teaching? And so sometimes there are natural and logical consequences for someone's actions, and those should be in place. What we don't want to do is disconnect and punish that's not related to the situation, because then, like, what are we teaching? That we can dominate and control over, that we don't have empathy and compassion, but there are consequences. Right.
Yeah.
A simple example, like, I remember when my kids were younger and they didn't want to wear a helmet to go scootering or biking. Well, the consequence is, if you're not willing to wear your helmet, then you can't scooter. Like, I'm not going to let you go scooter without a helmet. That's a safety issue.
Absolutely. And also, too, I was thinking of another situation as well when you were saying this with my son. So he's grade eight. And we've been really focusing a lot on him. It's him wanting to do. He really will do his preferred thing over his non-preferred thing. So when we're getting into schoolwork, he's been really struggling with getting certain things done, and he got way behind in something. And I found out only later that he missed even doing one of his quizzes, one of his tests that was for his math. And I got really upset. So I was like, you did half of it and you walked away. Like, how do you walk away from doing half a test? And we started talking all about this and realizing that his Pokemon was on the table. And at first I was like, okay, punishment, take all this Pokemon away, all of that stuff. Don't let him go to Pokemon tonight, or all of these things. And we started talking about it, and I'm like, okay, well, I feel like we shouldn't have the Pokemon in the same room, but not in a way of a punishment. Having it in the way of being, okay, this is stopping you from doing your work. So what if when you're doing your work, your Pokemon gets all put into a bag and goes like up in your room or somewhere else? He's like, that's a really good idea. And then I'm like, and I still feel you should be going to Pokemon at night, because that's your time with your friends. That's your connection piece. We shouldn't be taking that away from you, because the problem isn't the nighttime, the Thursday night Pokemon with your friends. The problem is that your Pokemon during the day was distracting you from getting your quiz done. And so you didn't do the quiz. So let's help you with strategies.
Exactly. Because then you're identifying what's the gap, right?
Yes.
What's the skill that needs to be learned, and how am I teaching it? So like, what I'm hearing you say is like, okay, he was struggling to focus because there's this distraction of the Pokemon. I get it. Like, I struggle with that too.
Right.
And so it's like, if you need to focus, how do you minimize those distractions? And here you guys came up with a solution of, let's put that away so it's not a distraction. And it sounds like, again, you got buy-in that this is something that we're going to try and work. And I really think that's the foundation of, let's understand what is going on here, because sometimes we look at the surface level of what we're seeing. And this is what, you know, a pet peeve of mine in the public school system that my kids were in for a little while, that I agree wasn't working for us, but it becomes very punitive. For example, if a child is misbehaving, what gets taken away? Outdoor time. And I'm like, that is likely what they are needing most if they're yes. having a hard time sitting and listening and focusing. So you've just shot yourself in the foot, because now you've taken that away. You have a child who needs it and who's going to continue to struggle, because that need for movement and time outside has been punitive. There's a lot going on at play there, but it's just an example. Sometimes when we use punishment, not understanding what's going on, it actually might work in the short term,
Yes.
Because a child might go into fight or freeze depending on what strategy you use, and they'll comply, but doesn't mean that that fosters one a long-term healthy relationship or that they've learned the skill that we want them to learn.
Yes. And that was as well with my son in school too, was I set up a meeting with the school in order to have a meeting with them and trying to figure out how to help and support my son. And they would not help the fact that he was bored in class and was above grade level, even though the teacher's saying he's above grade level. Eventually we did test and find out like grade three, he was grade eight math. Yet they would only, as soon as I said, but then how do we stop the outbursts? And they're like, oh, well, we can work on him when he's in the red. We can work on that. I'm like, but the problem that he's getting in the red is partly because he's bored. And then we also found out too, is he can't actually get all the answers on paper. He can verbally tell you them. He was struggling with that. And nobody even figured out ever that he couldn't get the answers on paper, even though he was academically ahead. And that was causing outbursts, that he was masking this in class. They only wanted to deal with the red, which in the red is like giving him strategies to start breathing, to start doing this when he feels things coming up, instead of actually going, well, why are you getting so stressed? Because you can do these strategies of the breathing and all of those skills, which are great in the moment when somebody is having an outburst, as adults and with kids, when we feel everything kicking in, it is important to do that. But it's really, really important to figure out, okay, why did we get in the rut?
Yeah. And a lot of what I talk about with the clients that I work with is understanding what we do in the moment and out of the moment. Like in the moment of those big emotions, we're not teaching. We're just trying to get through. We're supporting them in the best way that we can, because they're not in their higher brain, right? If you think about brain development, where they're not in the rational, there's no impulse control, there's no problem solving ability. We just need to get through, right? We need to get through the best we can using the resources and support we have. And then after, when we're calm and regulated, and for older kids, that might be the next day. For a younger child, I try and keep it close in proximity. But then we can talk about what was going on, putting language to the feelings, noticing where things were building and what would be supportive next time. But in those high stress moments, our goal is to support our kids to get through. And how do we do that?
Yes, right. Exactly as you said. So I just want to paraphrase what you said, because it is so important, is in that moment, when there's the outburst, when there's that big emotion, the strategies that we are using is to help that child come down from that, help that child, either if there's an anxiety or they've shut down or they're anger, yelling, hitting, is to be able to help them to find some calmness, to be able to get back to being calm and getting to that connection piece. It's not actually sitting there down with them and explaining to them what they did wrong and going over everything with them.
No, and that's actually a lot of the challenges that I noticed. It was in myself and the clients I work with. We talk too much in that state, and they're not actually able to receive that verbal communication. And so us going, it's like Charlie Brown, like, it doesn't work.
And it also escalates them more.
Right.
And they can't see when you're in that brain, you can't big picture think. So they can't think of what happened 10 minutes before or an hour or earlier in their day. So if they're coming home from school and melting down, it could be things that happened from the moment they got out of bed all the way through. And they can't even think about those things. They can't even remember them, because all they're knowing is that they are upset right now. And they can't connect those things until they're calm. And you can go, how was your day today?
Yeah.
What happened? And you know, what happened in school? How was recess? Did you eat your lunch? You can start finding out these questions and things that happened. Was something tough today? Did somebody say something that bothered you today? And you can start compiling that list with them to go, oh, this makes sense why when you came home, you were upset.
And I think that the hardest part, because it sounds easy, right?
Yes,
and,
right.
And
yes.
It's not.
No.
And the hardest part, at least from my experience and the work that I do with clients, is not our child, because oftentimes they are behaving in age-appropriate ways most of the time. It's what it brings up in us. And that was definitely my story. Like, I had a really hard time with my kids' big feelings. And it was me understanding what was going on for me and why I was reacting the way I was that led to my biggest transformation. I was always looking at, how do I make my kids stop? How do I make them stop behaving this way? Again, that looking outward. And there were things like the punishments and the timeout that I was like, oh, that's working, but it didn't feel good. It was disconnected, and it wasn't solving the problem, and our relationship was disconnected. But that was me not understanding at that time that the work I needed to do was first and foremost on me to be able to get comfortable in those uncomfortable situations. And why was I actually so uncomfortable in them?
I mean, in saying that too, there's so many reasons why a child can be struggling, and so many pieces of the puzzle. I mean, you've got sleep, nutrition, physical, all these things. And then you get the executive functioning struggle, where if these kids are struggling with perfectionism, with fear of making mistakes, with not being able to stop and pause before they have actions, with where their focus is all during the day, they're struggling with like more than one step at a time, or so many different ways that that part of our brain is managing everything of our everyday activity. When that part of our brain as well is struggling, then it makes everything else harder. So sometimes it's really hard as well to figure out why your child is struggling. Mm-hmm. And you can't solve that in the middle of that meltdown either. It takes a lot of time and effort too, to start really understanding what's behind your child's struggles as well. And when we're not having those react, like when we're struggling with the emotions, as you said, as well, and all of those things. I mean, my husband he's come so far and he's worked on it, but he used to feel that it was so personal.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I can share a story that when I first became a mother, I struggled, but the struggle was I had, my oldest was colicky, like defined colic, where he cried almost from, like, I remember it was like from 4 or 5 p.m. to 8 or 9 at night. And I had already been alone with him like all day. And then like the crying wouldn't stop. I wouldn't go outside. I was doing all the things that I thought I needed to do to soothe him. I had lulled myself into this false sense of control, because when I was pregnant, I was reading all these parenting books under the sun. And I literally lulled myself into a false sense of control, because I read that if you simply attune to your child, they will never cry. Or at least this is the message I took away from the book, right? If I can read their cues, if I can get their needs met, then there's no reason for them to cry. And so the story I was telling myself when my baby was now colicky is that I was failing, because I was like, I'm not meeting their needs. I'm doing all these things and I'm not meeting their needs. What I ended up realizing that I was holding within my body is this story that was my mother sharing with me, that I was this baby who would never cry. She would put me in my crib, and this was back in the 70s. I'm dating myself. I was a second child. I had an older brother. She'd throw me in my crib. She'd give me my bottle. She's like, you would sing yourself to sleep. And now in reality, as an adult, I know like that was likely not true, but that's the story my mother held on to, and the story that was imprinted on me, that I was like, oh, I never cried. Crying is not okay. And how she talked about how my older brother needed a lot of help being held to go to sleep. And I was like, I didn't need that. And this is where my fierce independence came, because I was acknowledged and praised for it. And I wasn't given that same love and nurturing. And so I held on to that subconsciously. And it came back when I had this baby who was crying inconsolably. And it brought up all of this in me, but it was putting those pieces. It's like pieces of a puzzle that you're starting to put together. And you don't always see the whole picture at that time. You're starting to piece them together. And I feel like my own journey has been putting those pieces together.
And it is. That's what I say too. There's never one piece in the puzzle. There's so many. And it is, as we talked about, is this child in the moment is having an outburst. There's a reason why they are. Our reactions play on how their reactions play on, and why are we reacting the way that we are? So we need to dive deep into our stuff at the same time as diving deep into our child's stuff, because we have all this free time as a parent. And it's easy to navigate this because the school knows how to direct us in this, which they don't. So this whole thing where we have to keep finding these pieces of this puzzle. And yeah, a big piece is us helping heal ourselves and help with the shame, help with the guilt, help with the stories and generational expectations of what parenting should, quote unquote, look like on the outside versus what it actually looks like on the inside. And all of these pieces, as they start coming into the puzzle, we start seeing that connection more with our child. We are less burnt out. We are happier. We're feeling more connection with the child. The child's feeling happier. The child's able to understand themselves more and be unapologetically at peace with being themselves over time. Yeah. The more pieces of this puzzle that we get in, the more we become unapologetically okay with who we are, the more our kids are able to do that themselves as well.
That is so true, right? Us accepting ourselves for who we are allows us to also do the same for our kids. Like, we can't give our kids something that we haven't given ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. If we have that internal inner critic and talking harshly about ourselves, it's hard to give them that empathy and compassion.
Yeah. And that's so, my one son this week, it's hilarious. His hair's been growing out, and he has, my husband's Asian, so he's got the very straight hair. So as it's growing out, it's like sticking out.
Spiky.
Spiking all on the one side. And then the other side was a little bit longer and it's kind of coming over. It looks really cool, but it looks like an avatar. And he loves to have messy hair. He thinks it's cool. And he wears his shirts backwards because that's just who he is and what he does. And I've been saying stuff to him is, I love how much you are being you, and being just who you are just brings me so much joy. And the other day he's like, Mom, why do you keep saying that to me? I'm like, because I couldn't do that growing up. I said, because when I did things like you did, if I wore my shirt backwards, or if I had like loved that I had crazy hair, I would be put down for it by my father. I would be ridiculed by my brother. I would be made to feel like I shouldn't be doing this. Anytime that I thought outside of the box, which is me all the time, and now I'm unapologetically that person, but anytime that I wanted to really learn new things or go down new things, I would often be put down or told that I was talking too much about a subject, or they wouldn't express interest in it, or all of these things that made me feel like I couldn't be me. And I said, I love that you are being you. It just brings me so much joy. And he's like, okay.
And our kids really need us to believe in them and acknowledge who they are before they're able to believe in themselves. And if we had no one doing that for us growing up, like we just said, we first have to do it for ourselves. You didn't have it growing up. Like, when you colored outside the lines, you were scolded for it. You were told to come back in the box. And so witnessing your son doing these things that you would have been criticized for, it takes taking that pause to recognize, like, no, I want them to feel good about who they are. Because if we allow them the space to do that, then they're going to shine and thrive, and they're going to follow their own path.
Yeah.
I often say, like, whose dream are you living? And oftentimes we're living someone else's dream. And do we want our kids to live someone else's dream or their own dream? Because it's going to look different than maybe what we imagined before we became parents.
Oh, definitely. Very different from what we imagined, for sure. I mean, I didn't think I would be pulling a kid from school and homeschooling, and that his brain would be so different. Though through learning about him, I've learned how different my brain is,
right,
and how different I think. And I'm understanding myself more through that journey. And my kids are so different from one another, incredibly different from one another. And I say things to them like, I love how different you are from one another. I love how you have a lot of the same values and you express it in different ways, and you're your own people. And I'm so excited to see where both of you are going to end up in your life because of the way that each of you thinks differently. And I love this. And I'm trying to help them understand that being different is, and having similarities, being different though as well is not a bad thing, that they, because I feel that I was brought up as well that if something was different, it was just instantly bad and everything.
And this is what breaks my heart. Even with, if we look around the world today, a lot of the challenges we have is because we think it's black or white, right or wrong. And I was like, how do we learn to listen to each other and accept differences and come to like a an agreement that works potentially for both of us versus, oh no, if you don't agree with me, then you're wrong or you're bad.
Yeah.
But the differences are okay. How do we coexist in those differences?
And that's where if somebody has such a different view than me, I love to ask questions.
Yeah.
I'm a bit curious. I'm like, tell me why. I'm like, I don't think I've ever thought of things from your side. Can you tell me why? Help me understand. And some people get upset with me and think I'm questioning them, and I have to help them understand. I've honestly don't, you know, I've never thought of things from your side. I'd really like to see, and you, maybe you can bring me over. Like, who knows? And it's just fascinating when you do start trying to see that other side and trying to be in somebody else's shoes and understanding as well about traumas. Where I come from the internal family systems, the IFS therapy, where we have all different parts to us.
Yeah.
And so my training in that as an IFS coach is where I believe everybody has parts. So how somebody is sometimes reacting to a situation is different than somebody else. It's because their parts are kicking up. And I'm always like, ooh, I wonder where that part came from, what happened, yeah. And start to really see things from such a different lens versus, mm-hmm. oh, they're not agreeing with me. This is personal.
Yeah.
And instead I'm like, ooh, they're on a very different side. I wonder what has happened in their life to bring them to that side of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And believing in that. And I'd really like to know and know more about that person.
That, like, I hear you say that curiosity, right? Mm. It's not coming from a place of judgment. It's coming from a place of curiosity. Like, what's happened to you? What's your story that's leading for that part to like feel like it needs to show up? Why is it there? I also love the work. I think it's Tara Brach, Radical Acceptance. Do you know mm-hmm. what I'm talking about? Yeah.
I've heard of it, but yeah, I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, the idea of really accepting all of our parts because they're all there for a reason. And it's understanding what they're there for and what to, they're there to do, and seeing it, that it could soften and maybe not show up as strongly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fascinating too, when you get two different parenting styles that are coming in as well, and start learning about all the different parts that are kicking in for each parent and how they parent. Like, one might turtle and go into their shell, whereas one might be like this shark and on the prowl and, you know, just on alert for safety of everything. They might be like worried about everything with their child and worrying about everything that may happen, or they might be just always on edge waiting for something and ready mm-hmm. to attack. And such different parenting, you start looking at why they developed those stress signs, as I call them, yeah. too, and what makes them themselves. I mean, you can start really understanding the different dynamics in their parenting styles and where they came from and why they are, instead of just saying, well, I believe in this way and that way is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me, it's always thinking back to the first 7 years of our life is where a lot of our subconscious programming comes in. I say it's kind of like a computer database, and it's all that stuff like intel inside, like everything that's inside that we don't see that really forms our sense of self. It's not necessarily our true sense of self. It's what we've learned, and their adaptations to what we, how we've learned to show up in the world that served us. But a lot of times there are stories and things that we've learned to do to cope. I talk a lot about those were coping mechanisms that we've taken on. And a lot of times, like, my coping mechanism of achievement was acknowledged, right? So I was like, oh, I'm going to keep doing this because, like, yay me, I get those, like, all those check boxes until you, for me, it was motherhood that made me realize that those things were a false sense of self and yeah. inner safety.
It is fascinating. Like, our childhood really does shape, and not even ways that we think of that they will. So one of the parts I know that I've worked on in myself, which I found totally fascinating, because once you start working on a part and you understand why it became what it became, and it's always come from the emotional, intellectual maturity of a child. So I was born in Saskatchewan, in Canada, in Saskatchewan. And my mom's whole family was in Saskatchewan, and we spent all of our time with them. Like, I have memories, like, as you said, I don't have tons of memories as childhood either. I blocked a lot of them out. I do have some of being in the garage with all the family in lawn chairs, and we're just all hanging out and joking and having fun. It was too cold to be outside, but we're just all having a great time. And I just remember feeling so secure so calm, so peaceful with them. And then my dad's from Ontario in Canada. And so we moved to Ontario. My dad got a really good job over here with Ontario Hydro. And we moved when I was like 3 or 4 years old. And that little part of me told, basically became this part, this trauma part that said, you can't get close to people because you will leave them. Instead of me continuing, like, we didn't have the internet and stuff back then, also dating myself, but it wasn't as easy to, like, we couldn't just FaceTime them and chat to them and keep that relationship up. It was basically, would have been writing letters, and phone calls were even still expensive then, right? So we didn't have a lot of communication with them. And so I really struggled a lot with building a connection up with them again, because I was like, well, you know, this part just was always stopping me from doing that.
Because then, I'm going to leave, and like, then that'll hurt.
Right. And so it really stopped me as well from building a lot of other solid relationships in my life, until I realized that and was able to help that part understand that it was my dad that moved. The family still loved me. They're all still there. I can still connect with them, like Facebook. There's so many ways to connect with them nowadays. And so that part has healed. And now I find that the way that I'm making connections with people is so much more in depth again. I'm making more longer term relationships. So it's fascinating how these things can really impact us and how we react with things, the way that we react to just things that were said to us as we're young. We put up walls. We can get anger. So then we do see those things in like a spouse or in our kids. It can bring up parts as well and certain reactions as well, which goes back to what you were saying earlier too, is really working on ourselves as well allows us then to even have more pieces of the puzzle in place and understanding in order to be able to help our children as well.
Yeah. And it's honestly that, like, what I've also come to accept is that it's never ending journey of learning and growth. And actually that excites me, right? Because every different season and stage that you're in could reveal different parts of that puzzle, right? And it's being open to learning and growing, getting curious, like you talked about, getting curious on what's going on for someone else and reacting that way, but also for ourselves, like, why was I reacting that way? Why am I feeling this way? What's going on? And it's when we do that work to understand ourselves that, again, we can do that with our kids and support them through it. Because what I want for my kids is I want them to have a strong sense of who they are. And I want them to feel good enough no matter what messages they're getting from the outside world, because my kids are quite different than what, you know, society says is great. They're not the most athletic kids. Yes, they swim, but they don't play sports. They don't think in your typical ways or behave in your typical ways. So out in the world, they sometimes, especially in the school environments they were in before we moved them, they sometimes get the message that they're not good enough or that they're different and that different is bad. And it comes back to the idea that we need to believe in them and support them so that they could develop that ability in themselves, because the world might not do that for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's it. Like, when all of the kids that I work with as well, right? Like, they're just, we don't fit in a box.
And I don't think any of us do, right? Like, what's
right? The box? No. Nobody should.
Those walls, there's no box. There's no, but okay. Yeah, like I get excited now about the opportunity to continue that learning and growth, and that it's not finite, like it's infinite. And how wonderful is it?
So there's one question that is hitting in my mind at this moment too, is though, as a parent, it is very, very hard. Well, we're kind of wired to believe that we need to help our child first before we can help ourselves. And that's like so strongly wired. There's a lot of guilt. There's a lot of shame if we take time for ourselves. So what would you say to a parent that, with everything they're saying, like, I hear you and I will work on myself after I've helped my child? What would you say?
Yeah. The analogy that I use a lot with this idea is, if you think about when you travel and you're on a plane, do you not hear, like, you have to put your own oxygen mask on first, right? And we do that because we know that if we cannot breathe and we're not alive, we cannot care or help someone else put their oxygen mask on. And that couldn't be more true in parenting, because that is part of parenting. Put your own oxygen mask on first. The only thing I'd say there is, depending on the season and stage we're in, we also need to give ourselves grace that what that looks like is going to be different, right? Like I just said, like when I first became a mom, that grief of like, oh, I can't go for a 3-hour run. Well, I could, but like, let's be honest. Like I used to live in a hilly neighborhood in Toronto. Pushing that stroller up the hills was like, oh, right. I just want to go for a run without this damn stroller. So looking at what season you're in and what is that way that I'm mindful of self-care. Like I do believe in that, but I think sometimes what we think of self-care ends up feeling unattainable. And I really want to think about what are those moments that you can tune into yourself and care for yourself. It might simply be, I'm going to mindfully wash these dishes, right? I'm going to slow down my breath, or I'm going to brush my teeth more slowly and tune into me. Like it could be those mindful moments that allow us to show up with more presence. It doesn't have to be. And I had a lot of resentment because we didn't have extended family support. It's like, oh, I was envious of those parents that were like leaving kids with the grandparents and going away for the weekend. I'm like, I don't get that. It's not fair, blah, blah, blah. And really it was looking for like, what are those small moments that I'm able to do that for myself? Like after the kids are in bed, instead of binge watching a show on Netflix that I like might be fun sometimes, I'm actually going to go to bed earlier because I know if I don't get good sleep, it's harder for me the next day. So I'm going to prioritize sleep. And so I always like to work with parents to find what are those small ways that we can support ourselves based on the season that we're in so that we could do our own oxygen mask. And it's not an either or, it's how do we do an and.
Totally agree with you. Normally I ask somebody if there's anything else that we haven't covered that you would like to say, but I have a feeling that might've been your big thing. So is there anything else that we have not covered that you feel the audience needs to know, or was that it?
God, I feel we've touched on so many things. And what I want parents to know is that wherever they're at in this journey, if something doesn't feel right or something feels hard or challenging, that getting support along the way can make a huge difference in finding that joy. Because sometimes we can't see what we can't see. Like we need help removing those blinders and that support. We're really meant to do this in connection, right? We heal and we grow in relationship and in building that inner safety. And sometimes we need someone to help us find that inner safety within ourselves if we never had it in our childhood. And so really feeling that if things aren't going the way you'd like them to, you don't have to accept that as normal or as okay or good enough. Like you can have the family and the life of your dreams, and it's okay to ask for support along the way.
That's a great spot to leave everybody with. That's really good. All right. So Jen, we have in the show notes, so anybody that does want to get in touch with Jen, we have Jen's website, her Instagram, her LinkedIn. You can follow her on everything. So go down to the show notes and get that. And then Jen also is leaving us with 3 critical steps to parenting with ease. Can you just give a really quick explanation of what that is that you're leaving for everybody?
Yeah. So it's basically the best that I've done to try and transform the one-on-one work that I do with clients through email. And so you'll get a series of emails throughout, you know, 8 to 12 weeks that'll guide you through these steps to breaking cycles. And the first part is like tuning into ourselves, what's going on for us, understanding our child and how to connect with them. So you'll work through these 3 steps to finding more joy and ease independently. And I'm always available if you want support, but that's absolutely free. You do it on your own. You get an email with prompts and reflections and things to think about, and you do it on your own, but I'm always just an email away.
Amazing. All right. Well, that link as well is in the show notes for everybody. So thank you, Jen, for being with us today. And everybody definitely go to the show notes and give Jen some love and support.
Thanks for having me, Andy. It's been so wonderful talking to you. And I feel like I can just talk to you forever.
Yeah, absolutely. No, this has been so great. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening today. If you would like to work with me as well, you can go down to the show notes and catch the link for my support circle, which is my monthly membership group that is full of parents just like you, where we help you work on everything to do with your child, all things that could be increasing their stress system, getting them to have these really big emotions, and helping you manage them with your kid, as well as helping support your child. So that link as well is in the show notes, and I will see you in the next episode.